Hello, welcome. You're listening to Feed, Play, Love, a bite-sized parenting podcast, a place you can find advice, understanding, and support as you care for your small humans. I'm Siobhan Hunt. Sleep doesn't really go hand in hand with raising a little human, but there are ways to establish good sleeping foundations to help your baby have his or her best start possible. Veena Parry is a paediatric sleep consultant based in Sydney with over 15 years' experience in the early childhood and education sector. Hi, Veena, how are you?
Hi, I'm so good. Thank you for having me.
How early can you start setting up a healthy foundation for your baby's sleep?
I think really, I mean, if you want to be technical about it, it can be done prenatally in terms of that the first thing you would look at isn't really even to do with the baby as such yet. It's to do with the environment. So you want to figure out exactly how you want to set the foundations for sleep for your child. Are you going to, you know, bed share? Are you going to have a bassinet next to your bed? The recommendation is that you room share for the first 6 months of life. So usually families set up a space in their own bedroom. And it's about kind of looking at that sleep hygiene is what I would call it, even before the baby comes and then once the baby has arrived. So obviously, first things first, once that baby arrives, especially those first 2 weeks, it's all about that skin to skin, love, comfort, and survival. Okay, so, you know, don't be thinking about anything quite as yet. It's just about loving that little human and being with them as much as possible, contact, sleeping, skin to skin, all that stuff. And then as they become more cerebrally aware, and you know, that can happen in the first few weeks of life. But remember, technically that first 12 weeks, they are still in the fourth trimester. They're still adjusting to life outside. So you want to make everything just slow, deliberate, and gentle. And little things that make all the difference is maybe just starting with an in quotation marks, bedtime routine. So the first thing I would say to any parent is, if you can set up, the only thing I would say is demand everything, like do everything on demand. Sleep is on demand, feeding can be on demand, all of it. But what I would say is that if you want to have a little bit of an idea of getting into a rhythm for Bubby and you, set a start of the nighttime like routine. So say, you know, for really young babies, usually the start of night is later, like 9, 10 p.m. And you want to do your bedtime routine around then. And I don't want you to think this is this huge thing that needs to be like drawn out. For a newborn, it can be 2 minutes. And also, you know, doctors usually don't really say you should bathe your newborn every night. So it could be as simple as every 3 nights you do bath, song, change, massage, bed. And then the other nights you just do massage, change, bed sort of thing. And if you can set to a time every day, it gives you sort of a semblance of, okay, this is the 12-hour shift into nighttime and then the 12-hour daytime. Other things would be, you know, they're so used to the sounds of the womb and things like that. So maybe some, I don't really believe in like industrial white noise and things like that, but sometimes like natural sounds in the background, especially if like you're living in the inner city or things like that, can be really calming for them because they're used to that amniotic flow of waters and that, you know, the heartbeat, all those sounds from the womb. So that can be really, you know, cozy for them because it's reminding them of where they used to be. So I think that's a really, really great thing to do. And also just making sure in those early weeks that you look at day and night confusion. That can be a big thing. So just making sure that when you do shift into those 12 hours of daytime, that you make sure they've got a lot of like first things first after change and cuddles and everything and maybe feeding, get some, that first feed should be done with some sun on their face, like within reason, of course, but you know, blinds open, light, things like that. Whereas in that 12 hour night shift, you might make the room a little bit darker. Doesn't have to be super dark. You don't really need to look at that sort of hygiene until they're much later and more aware, but it does make all the difference.
So with that light, I just bring it up now because I remember so when you first start feeding your baby in the middle of the night, you're kind of all over the shop, or at least I was. And I reckon
me too.
I bought every different kind of possible nightlight because I needed to be able to see them.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? It wasn't for them. It was for me because I'm 100%. How do I find you and then find my boob and how do I do all this?
And like stay away from the online shopping in the middle of the night feeds.
Didn't do that very well. But,
no, neither do I.
So in that sense, when you, at what stage does light become something that will wake them up?
Okay. So look, I really believe that, you know, I see it usually around that 6 to 8 month period where they become more, I guess, sensitive towards light. Like even in naps, you might need to darken rooms and things like that. But what I would say in terms of, so, you know, I did the exact same thing that you did. I actually really recommend a nightlight with a red glow, not necessarily like, you don't need to go and spend $180 or something like that on a huge machine that, you know, does the whole gambit. But like literally, I remember I was at the Sydney Baby Expo and I saw these beautiful LCD like Perspex nightlights. And my husband used to make this really cute owl sound and we saw an owl one. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's meant to be. And it has actually a remote with it that changes like 10 different colors. So it's really good later on when you're teaching your child colors too. And it's just beautiful. And it comes in like robots and rockets and owls and bees and mermaids and all sorts of things. And what I would do it, during a feed, when it come to that wakeful period, I would turn it on with that red light. And the reason for red light is because it allows that melatonin to still be produced. You use anything white, blue, green, any of the colder colors, it's going to completely be nuking yours and Bubby's melatonin hormone levels. So I would do that and I would find it would just be really relaxing. I could still see, but it wasn't going to affect, you know, my shift into sleep and also Bubby's. I think it's a really, really good tool to use, but I wouldn't really necessarily use light in a child's room all night long unless they're, you know, showing in or exhibiting signs of like night terrors or nighttime fears, and usually developmentally that's a lot older.
It's a lot older.
Yeah.
So obviously every baby is different.
Mm-hmm.
But how can we work out the right sleep patterns and rhythms for our baby? You just mentioned there earlier about demand feeding and demand sleeping.
Yes.
Demand feeding is much easier to know because they're basically screaming.
Yeah, and there's a lot of feeding signs. And look, there is a lot of sleep signs too. And this is sort of something I want to debunk. You know, they say, I remember even with my first at a clinic appointment, they didn't know that I was a sleep professional and I didn't tell anyone. And there was a group of like 20 women. And I remember maybe the youngest babies there were 3 or 4 weeks old. And I remember, you know, the generalized rule was 2 hours up, 2 hours down. And look, this is just me. And I know that works for some people. So I'm not saying it doesn't work sometimes. But I just believe like with a newborn, especially, I mean, you would remember those early days. It's literally feed and then back to sleep. There's nothing else. And then it's just about looking at those signs and things like yawning, rubbing eyes. That's actually already, you've missed the boat. Baby's already overtired. So you want to look before that and you will start to realize a pattern. Like if you pay real attention to looking at, okay, when are they yawning? When are they rubbing their eyes? And then pay attention to the 10 minutes before that, you're going to start seeing a pattern of behavior. And that can be as early as 5-6 weeks. You'll start to see that even earlier, you know, in the really early days of the fourth trimester, baby will just go to sleep usually after a feed. And that's how you know. But as they become more wakeful and they need a little bit more, like help with going to sleep, you look at those signs. And basically it's all about like every child is different. So I've seen 3 months olds that can't go more than 45 minutes in the mornings. And then I've seen others that can stretch 2 hours. And I would say, please, please, please take a personalized approach to your child. Your child is the only one in the world that is your child. So, and they're going to be different from every other baby. Like I've worked with triplets and they've had different approaches. So you just want to look at their, what I would call tired signs, and then look at their wake windows. How much wake time are they actually needing? You know, and you kind of follow that whole, I like to think about the whole wake, feed, play, sleep.
What about people who have a catnapper? Because that can be something that happens.
Yes. Okay. So, and do you, at any specific age, or are you just talking catnapping generally?
Probably sometime in the first 6 months. Okay. A while ago that mine was that young, but she catnapped and it made it really tough to get her to sleep any longer.
Okay. And like, so definition of catnapping is usually 30 to 20 minute cycles. And what I want to say, and I don't know if you knew this, but to be honest, like up until 6 months, it's completely developmentally normal for your child's sleep cycle to be that immature, to only be 25 to 30 minutes. And that, like, don't beat yourself up if that is happening, because that is kind of some children's sleep cycles are only that long. So that's completely normal. But what I would say is that look at how your child is being stimulated when they wake up from that cycle. If they're waking up happy and they look like they don't need any more sleep, then that's probably all they need. And I would look at doing more frequent sleeps. So they're doing shorter ones, do more frequent ones. I remember working with this family in Perth, and they had a catnapper, and it was pretty developmentally appropriate, and she always woke up happy. So we were, like, in the early days, we were doing like 7 naps a day. And like, I know that's a little bit of a punish, but it doesn't mean you can't be fluid with it. Some might be at home, some might be in the pram, some might be in the car, at school drop-off, wherever.
And is it possible if you've got a baby like that, that eventually their sleep will elongate?
Yes. And look, a lot of people come to me with catnapping issues sometimes before 6 months. And I always, the first thing I say is, look, I need you to know that could be completely developmentally appropriate. And it might be unrealistic to think that we're going to see them extend immediately, because it's just not physiologically possible for them yet. However, with gentle sleep skills and the ones that I show and that I go through with the families I work with, when they are ready, they will just extend, because they have the skills to help themselves back to sleep, or with your help, you know. And you can always, this is a funny little tip, but you can always, as your child is stirring from that first cycle, if you want to give this a go, and look, it's tried and true, a little bit weird, but get a bath towel and put it over your face, like, which is a little bit OH&S, but like, literally go in there covered up by the towel and try and rock or pat your baby back to sleep, like, lay it on, and they will sometimes go back to sleep.
Oh, isn't that but if funny? So they don't react to your face.
Well, they don't get overstimulated, because obviously your face is going to be the most interesting thing in the world to them.
Yeah.
So it's not about them not having the comfort of you there. It's more that you don't want to overstimulate them when you are trying to get them back to sleep.
I'd love to see parents doing that.
Oh my gosh, I've done it. I've been in implementations before where I'm like, I know the baby is a bit more on the alert side, and so I've literally grabbed a blanket and I'm hiding in the corner, like next to the cot, so they don't see me.
Is there a point in the baby's life, mm-hmm, where you would recommend any sleep aids in terms of dummies, etc.?
Okay, so I'm a little bit unorthodox for most sleep professionals. I love a dummy. Bring on the dummy. I mean, I don't know if you're already sort of getting the gist of this, but as I said, I am pretty attachment parenting friendly, and I focus on, apart from a personalized approach to every child, I also think that if you can provide comfort without it, as I said, without it really affecting their sleep cycles or affecting their restorative sleep, then do it. Both my kids had severe reflux. So, with our first, we had a dummy pretty much immediately. And look, it became a sleep association, but I wouldn't take it back for a second, because when you have a child that has that sort of issue, or they might have something else going on, or they're just really colicky, or they're going through purple phases of crying, you're going to do anything you need to have them happy, safe, secure, and sleepy. And for me, it was thinking about, okay, well, if they don't have this, he's going to be constantly swallowing. So with reflux, right, they constantly swallow the acid down. And what the dummy does, it helps keep it down, because they're constantly using that reflex to suck. And for me, it was a no-brainer. Yeah. You know?
What about comforters and teddies and stuff?
Okay, so this, I'm a little bit, there's many different recommendations. As I said, like, yes, I do I'm completely supportive of families that want to co-sleep, and I've worked with a lot of attachment parents and co-sleeping parents even. But what I would say with some lovies and comforters that are on the market, and I'm not going to name names or say anything, some actually make the wakeful periods worse due to some of the things they do. And on top of that, look, this is just me personally. I wouldn't be putting, unless you've got a really, really movable, like your baby's like pulling up and completely mobile by like 8-9 months, I wouldn't be putting anything in the cot before 10 months, like any type of lovey comforter. Having said that, once you get to that age and you're feeling really confident about it, I mean, look, I think the guideline is after 7 months, but I'd be really careful about it. Like some of the things I've seen, I'm just... What and about some of the materials, they're just not breathable.
What about the ones, so there's lots of people, lots of sleep deprived parents who go crazy for the
I know what you're going to say.
Dolls or comforters that might mimic a heartbeat or, so those are the ones you're saying just don't buy into it?
Look, I've heard great things about some with the heartbeat, and then I've heard people go, that was $100, I wish I could get back. Do you know what I mean? And those are the parents that come to me. Like even, you know, and it goes even as far as like the bassinets that, you know, have you heard of the Snoo?
Yeah.
The one that like rocks your baby and things like that. And look, apparently you can wean off it, but I'm just not a fan. Like I'm just not a fan of those things because I think that's just something you're going to have to remove later on.
Or you're going to have to find a bed that rocks
Or you're going to lose $2,000 because that's how much it is. And also, I mean, it would be great. I mean, it's an ingenious idea if they had it that lasted up to 5 years old.
Yeah.
You know, but because like I literally worked with a family about 2 weeks ago and they'd been using it and they'd used it longer than they should have because now their baby would not go to sleep without being shaken. Like
rocked,
shaked to, you know, that movement, that vibration. And they were like, what do we do? You know? And I guess what I meant specifically with some of these lovies that work against you is they sometimes have music and things like that in them. And look, the music, I think really, and look, again, some people just swear by them and have at it. Like, I'm so happy for those parents, you know? But then also if you've got a pretty alert baby or things like that, you're basically just inducing a sleep cycle wake up because the music turns off literally on the either 20 minutes at a sleep cycle or 45 minutes. So unless you're ready to go in there and like keep turning it on and on, like, and again, you know, but I think it's more, I think like when I introduce comforters, loveys to families that I work with, it's more about not helping them go to sleep. It's more about them feeling secure and having something as a just something to love and to cuddle. I have a funniest story. So a family I worked with a few weeks ago, I said, look, they had been a co-sleeping from birth family and we did a very scaffolded approach and they were quite anxious about it and it went really, really well. But I said beforehand, it was an older baby just under 12 months. And I said, look, I want you, so something I really recommend is going to IKEA once baby is of a safe age, of course. And they have a great range of little plush toys. And the thing I love about them is they're super soft, they're cheap, and they also don't have marble eyes, so there's no choking hazard there with them. They're not a certified sleep toy, so I will preface by saying that. But I said to this family, I said, go and choose one. Like, you know, they've got a cute Simba, they've got a cat, they've got a husky, like panda, all this stuff. And then she like rang me and messaged me later that day. And she was like, you are not going to believe what he chose. And she sent me this picture and it was a picture of this terrifying looking, it's called the vegan vampire. And it's like this blue little soft toy with like vampire teeth. Yeah. And I was just like, oh my God. And I've got pictures, like I'll show you later. I've got pictures literally of him like just like hugging this like little vampire thing. And another client had seen, like I'd done a story on Instagram and another client in from Mississippi had seen it. And she was like, oh my gosh, yes, yes. And they went and got it. Like she ordered it because she, and now her son's, she's like, he's obsessed. I got like 10.
And it worked. Well, look, just quickly in summary, if you had to give parents a couple of tips on setting up a healthy sleep foundation, what would the top tips be?
Okay, so make sure that you're setting a wake time in the morning every same, like if you can, the same time every day, and a sleep time every time, like the same time every day. And you kind of want to look at a 12-hour window-ish, so maybe 9 to 9, okay, and then do that shift. Always get some sun on their, like make sure they know the difference that these are the daytime feeds and these are the nighttime feeds, so that day and night confusion. And look at a bit of sleep hygiene where you can. And also, just when you start seeing them become more aware, just either seek help or start looking at doing things really slowly and gently. Yeah, that's basically it.
Veena, thank you so much for your time
You're
today.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
That's Veena Parry. She's a pediatric sleep consultant. She's a pediatric sleep consultant based in Sydney, and we'll put links to where you can find out more information about Veena and the work she does in the notes of this episode. Feed, Play, Love is a Babyology podcast produced by Debbie Ning and presented by me, Siobhan Hunt. We'd love to hear from you, so if you'd like to get in touch, email us at feedplaylove@theparentbrand.com.au. See you next time.